Doug Anderson.
Yeah, I wanted to actually address the second topic on your slide there a little bit, the PCAOB guidance and getting back to what the auditors need to do. To get there, though, I mean, I could pile on to all the conversation that's gone on this morning already. As I think of it, there's four or five things that will really change audit risk. One is you've got the need to understand the new standards, just the capacity to understand them. Secondly, building the competency, exercise judgment, that's clearly there. You've also got one that I don't think we've talked about much this morning is the process changes or the systems changes that will have to occur within an organization. If you think about something even as simple, which technically from an accounting perspective is not that technical, which is a financial statement presentation, the system and process implications of that are pretty severe. I know when we've looked at that, that's a very difficult one to implement. The direct cash flow method will take major impact on our systems and processes in the company. You go to lease accounting, financial instruments, you'll have a lot of that. So that pressure is there also. And then you compound it with, I think it was something Mike mentioned, which is this economic environment didn't leave a lot of issuers, like my company, with a lot of extra people sitting around with nothing to do. We've already been stretched. So given that those are there, which is how I would look at it as an auditor, those risks and issues are there, what does that mean? Well, that means in the short term, which is now, is we're trying to get ready, and let's just assume that we expect some new pronouncements to come out in 2011 or 2012. We have to start dealing today with how to do that. What does that mean to an issuer? We have to pull resources off the normal accounting and normal work we're doing and put them on teams and task forces to try to change and get ready for this new issuance. That raises the risk of an error or possibly even irregularity in our accounting today. When we go forward and this does get implemented in the future, again, we now have new things, new judgments, new processes. Is it perfect day one? Unlikely. It's never happened that way in the past. So we have an increase in errors and, again, the possibility of irregularities in the future. So I look at this and say audit risk is up a lot. It's up starting today, not 2011, not 2012. The audit risk is up now as we have to divert resources to get ready for this because we can't wait. We have to start thinking about it now. So what do we need as far as PCAOB guidance and updates? I'm not sure if we need a lot of new standards, maybe tweaking, changing the standards. I think there's been good discussion about judgment framework and trying to make sure there's good standards around judgment and especially documentation of maybe some of those judgments because I'm not sure the documentation standard is real clear on that. But clearly I think we need interpretive guidance to make sure the auditors understand the nature of the change in the audit risk in this environment. And I think the standards are pretty clear that audit risk always has to drive the procedures of an auditor. But I'm not so sure that we couldn't use some more interpretive guidance, whether it's a staff alert or something, that would make sure we have the right focus and right appreciation for what I'm perceiving as a substantive change in the audit risk within each of the organizations. And then, again, that would also feed back into the inspections group, so that they're looking at this properly and appropriately with ultimately good feedback into the FASB and the SEC as to how this is all working out. So I see a pretty strong need for some action by the PCAOB in that second bullet point quite soon because I think the audit risk has changed now already just with this discussion because we don't know how it's going to work out. And I can tell you as my company is an issuer, we can't wait for this to be sorted out 18 months from now as whether we have new standards. Because it takes more effort and more time than that to be ready for it.
I think those are really insightful comments about the audit risk environment today. And I think it builds on something Mike Gallagher said in his comments earlier, that companies are already stretched in the current economic environment and have reduced their resources in many cases. And at the same point in time, we'll have to be addressing how to implement these new standards. And then ultimately putting in new systems and controls around so many changes, which will obviously, we haven't talked a lot about this, but audits of internal controls over financial reporting and addressing all of those changes as well as the accounting and the financial reporting implications, the ICFR implications of the massive amount of systems changes I think you're getting at as well. So good points there. Kurt Schack.
Thank you. I think that Lynn Turner and I should do a rap on YouTube. And we can call it Convergence. What is it good for? I'm not sure that I share his view that we need spiritual help at this point, because as we read the latest SEC discussion about this and also what Larry just said about it, that the deadline is really a deadline to assess the progress. of where we are on the memorandum of understanding, as opposed to making a decision about adoption. And that's the discussions that we've been hearing and having about it. But just on the capacity side, it's clearly a capacity for the issuer, preparer, auditor side. I'm not sure it's a capacity issue for the investor being unable to, you know, utilize and assess higher quality, better financial reporting. I'm not sure that's a reason for us not to be doing this. But the question I do have just on the audit side is how do you possibly get your hands around what the cost to the system is if with this package? How do you go about doing that?
Who's that a question to?
You know, just I don't
have a clue. I mean, it just goes beyond the scope of, you know, just I've heard estimates just on the direct method cash flow, you know, companies that have widely disparate operations, larger companies, I've heard some pretty big numbers, just that. But clearly there'll be massive changes required to systems, processes, you know, and how you go about your business. So the cost, I wouldn't hazard a guess. I would defer to some of the preparers in the room that might have a better idea than I do, but it's extensive, obviously.
Damon Silvers.
I want to make a couple of broad comments about this matter. I have always been a little bit more moderate than some investor advocates around the question of whether convergence abstractly is a good idea. I've always been open to that as a possibility. However, I have two reactions to this presentation that seems to me raises two really important points. And one of them, I think, is very much along the lines of what Lynn and Kurt and Barb have said, and that is that. But I'm going to take it to a place that I'm not necessarily sure they will agree with. I'm very pleased that the PCAOB staff recognize that when you move as both the convergence agenda appears to be seeking to move and as the FASB and the ISB have been moving, when you move under the to a more comprehensive fair value approach to financial reporting, in a world in which there actually aren't markets for many things, liquid functioning markets, that you're doing the opposite of what you think you're doing, that you're moving not toward a world of greater precision and economic accuracy, but toward a world of essentially increasingly arbitrary judgments, and then that's very, very difficult to audit. Now we're seeing that sort of being shall we say, elaborated upon, and I think it's very good that the board understands that and is trying to get their arms around it. There's no way then this is not a matter the board controls, right? And this sort of goes to the point of where are the grown-ups. And I'll just restate my view that I think this notion that we are doing something useful in any respect by moving toward a universal fair value approach to financial reporting is mistaken and has had very negative economic consequences and will continue to. The second point I want to make is about the politics of this. And by the way, let me just put my one sort of caveat on that. I'm not saying that fair value is inappropriate for everything. I think there are a number of areas where it is appropriate, and the more that you are looking at assets or liabilities, think about this from the asset side. The more you are looking at assets for which there is a liquid market held against liabilities which can be called at any time, the more that fair value is appropriate. And that leads me to my comment about the politics. I must say it's been a busy time, and I hadn't noted that the Obama administration's Treasury Department appears to be continuing on the Bush administration's Treasury Department agenda in this area. It saddens me to learn that, and I would reiterate the comments made by others that this is an area where the Commission needs to get its back up. It is not clear to me at all exactly where the political support for the Treasury Department's point of view is in our broader national government, and I can easily imagine where the opposition would come from should that agenda continue to move in that way. It finally appears to me, and this is connected to this, to my point about where the opposition would come from, it appears to me in looking through this document and from what I am aware of in terms of the general direction of both standard-setting bodies, that there's a very raw and ugly politics underneath this that hasn't been mentioned, which is that the privileged get to shape a fake fair value agenda and that the underprivileged get to live with the full negative consequences of fair value. And by that I mean it seems pretty clear that no one really intends to force large financial institutions to accurately value assets on their books which are being held against deposits on call. And that, by contrast, there is a very clear intent to enforce a fair value regime in the employee benefits context, where the liabilities are not immediate in that way, and where there's far less merit behind the whole concept. And if anyone doubts what I mean, they might take a look once again, as I've said at every PCAOB SAG meeting, and as I will say until this changes. That the TARP oversight panel found that it was impossible to figure out what the value of toxic assets was on the balance sheets of the major banks. And as far as I know, it remains impossible to do that. And until that changes, it strikes me it's fundamentally unfair and politically not viable to insist that type of regime be applied to pension benefits or health care benefits. And I think that, if we want to talk politics, that is a message that will find many sympathetic ears in the Congress of the United States.
Thanks, Damon. Arch?
Thanks, Marty. I guess a few comments with respect to some of the auditing side of things. When you look at these standards and the direction that they're taking the financial reporting, it's obviously, as it's been mentioned, increasing the use of estimates, and as a result, I would suggest the lack of precision, because you are getting into some significant estimation processes. And it's been mentioned that's going to take resources to understand how to accomplish that, to change systems, to change controls. From the auditing perspective, it seems to me it's going to demand the increased use of specialists. I look at the lease accounting side, and it almost seems like it's an economic forecasting kind of model, so you may be considering the need to get economists involved. So obviously a lot of audit challenges, and I think the other thing that comes to mind from a auditing perspective is that when you get into estimation, it seems to me disclosures are going to become increasingly important. So I think you may need to look at that area from an auditing perspective and whether you feel additional requirements might be needed. I can't avoid, I guess, speaking somewhat to the standards themselves and the timing that we've talked about, and understanding that the FASB has no deadline for the issue of these standards, and their goal is improving financial reporting. But when you look at this, I think that the regulators, including the PCAOB and the SEC, do in fact have to take a look at the situation with the plans that are coming down, and if they believe that investors are going to be put at risk because of the dangers to the financial reporting or the quality of auditing, they have to stand up and speak and say this just can't be.
Thanks. Jim Schneider.
Thanks, Marty. Just a couple of observations, and again, back to the standard setting aspects of this. First one is, I agree with the comments earlier about the one of the key areas that may need some standard setting would be in the judgment area. While I acknowledge Tom's point around we make a lot of judgments today, but we're going to become responsible for making a lot more judgments, and those judgments will be a lot more important. I think in the absence of that, if you look at individual standards, what becomes a de facto standard setting process is the inspection process. And I think in connection with that, it would be very important, and I would urge the board to consider to put in a process around the inspection process that looks at those areas where there tend to be disagreements between the auditors and the inspectors around whether or not reasonable judgments were made. Because without that, as I said, the inspection findings become de facto standard setting with respect to individual standards. The last point I would like to make is in terms of the cooperation between the PCOB and the FASB, I think as a general practice, the IASB has interaction with the IAASB around their standard setting, and they actually have, in most cases, working groups set up for each proposed accounting standard project. And I think that brings a little bit more focus to each of those projects and what the auditing implications might be, and then whether the IAASB needs to take, some standard setting action in regards to those.
That's a good comment, and I think we've heard a couple of times the importance of our standard setting group to be working closely with the FASB through this, and that's come through loud and clear. Thanks. House Schroeder?
Yeah, picking up on something Lynn said earlier about, we're heading towards standards that are going to be complete chaos. I would challenge that comment because from an investor perspective, book value, current GAAP accounting, financial statements are relatively useless. I kind of think of them as a Maginot line that's constantly overrun by economic forces. I pick on J.P. Morgan because they reported today. We've seen it trade between 0.9 of book value, GAAP book value, to 2.5 times book value, and sometimes, and just in the last week, it's moved 10% against book value. It's not providing a lot of concrete information to investors, at least some investors. I do not want to speak for everyone. But I'm also very sensitive, having been an auditor for 13 years, I'm very sensitive to the comments around the room about things, pick up on a couple comments, lack of precision, greater use of specialists, world of arbitrage judgments. All those are true comments. And as I sit here, I'm going to try to split the baby and ask a combination of the FASB and the PCAOB if it's not practical to maybe put the brakes on in some way but move us forward. We're never going to move forward if we don't force this issue of providing investors with more meaningful information. And I think we can all accept that we're not getting meaningful information today, at least not to the degree that we need it. So here's my question, proposal, thought, as I sit here and listen to everyone. If the FASB were to come and say, we're going to just freeze accounting standards as they stand today, and that we're going to present a balance sheet income statement under current accounting standards, and to the right of that, we're going to give you what we think is the right new direction for accounting standards. My personal belief, full fair value, Larry, including core deposit intangibles, and we can debate that later. Everything fair valued. I fully recognize the difficulties for some assets. I will challenge Damon on the comment that toxic assets don't have value. They may be zero, but people don't accept that. And we can debate whether toxic assets have value or not. But here's the real question. Can you present a side-by-side set of financial statements for, say, a period of 3, 4, or 5 years and just label them as unaudited, giving everyone time to build systems, build the expertise, but at the same time move the ball down the field, head us in the right direction, or what I perceive to be the right direction, And if in that process of the next 3 to 5 years we learn that, maybe it is a combination of cost and fair value, or maybe we should have one column for cost and one column for fair value, and as we learn and gain the expertise and then ultimately move toward auditing whatever it is right. And I go back to my swimming pool analogy. I'm not teaching my daughter to swim in the deep end. I'm teaching her, and she's 2 and a half. She thinks she can swim in the deep end, but I'm teaching her on the steps in the pool where she can stand up. And if we gradually move her into the deep end, she'll be okay. But it seems like we're trying to jump too quick into the deep end here, and maybe there's some interim step that we can have in an unaudited set of financials side by side.
Thanks, Hal. Gail Hansen?
One of the things that I think it would be helpful as we talk about how this impacts auditors is to think of the audit committee members, because a lot of them were educated before these standards started to come out in such rapidity, these standard changes. And so as I think about audit committees, I would like the auditors to think about the audit communications and the increased risk, because I've heard people talk about the impact of these changes in the accounting standards on the organization, the impact on audit risk, and the resources that organizations are going to need to address that. And I would encourage the auditors to put that, and I don't know if this is a PCAOB's role or not, but to put that in audit communications, because we're looking to the audit committee members to be directing the audit and be our watchdogs. And if they don't they don't talk about this on a daily basis like a lot of you that are practitioners or issuers. And so the audit committee members really have to be part of this dialogue to understand the impact that this is going to have on their organizations.
Thanks, Gail. Larry Salva.
Thanks, Marty. Doug Anderson covered a lot of what I wanted to say, but I thought that unless and until the so-called grown-up arrives in the room and calls an end to the insanity of trying to make believe that we're going to stay on this treadmill on this time frame, whether you call it a deadline or a target, I think a lot of us believe that even the target is just not achievable. So, and like I said, unless and until the insanity ends, I think the responsible thing to do is for, and I think it's a combination of the SEC and the PCAOB, is to set priorities in terms of what if certain amount of change is implemented fairly quickly, whether it's 3 standards, 5 standards, or even just 1 standard. But we know that even if it comes later, we're moving from a rules-based environment, and most of the profession, the generation of the profession that's there today, whether it be preparers or auditors, have been working mostly with rules. I believe the biggest priority is for the accounting judgment framework to actually get documented, developed and adopted, and respected if followed. The auditing judgment framework, I think, is important that it get the same thing happen, that it be developed and adopted and respected if followed by the regulators, by the inspectors, et cetera, that auditing judgments and estimates standard could and should be improved. And as Lynn mentioned, somehow it seems like the preparation of fair value in footnotes is not as diligent either by the preparer or by the auditor somehow when it's in footnotes, so more guidance on auditing footnotes and judgments and estimates in footnotes as to what's expected there. And also, as you mentioned, the internal control over financial reporting, potential guidance to auditors on assessing issuers' capacity and process for implementing accounting changes in what's reasonable. For example, when does it rise to a level of becoming a significant deficiency or material weakness in terms of a company's system of controls? I recall that as we first moved into ICR, internal control over financial reporting, that a number of companies got deficiencies identified in terms of their ability to apply FAS 109 or income tax lists because they just didn't have the right capacity in tax departments. And somehow the tax departments have been given that responsibility for the accrual accuracy. The process change in terms of it's kind of both the process over the transactions that may have to change, but it's just trying to implement standard changing or a standards change. I think guidance, I just expect that we should see and should expect to see more significant deficiencies because of lack of capacity to implement change. But I think the priorities really have to be towards the judgment frameworks, because I don't believe that a lot of the people in the profession of either preparing or auditing know how to reasonably apply judgment in the application of accounting and auditing those accounting judgments.
Good comments. Thanks, Larry. Lynn Turner.
I'd like to come back to something that Jim Snur was talking about, which I think is an excellent idea, and that is the process is running, that the FASB and the PCAOB set up individual groups of staff on both sides, including someone from the international side. I'd actually bring into that someone from the preparer side as well, and so that you identify in a fashion that you identify each of the major key areas where there's potential for problem. And I think Larry did a very good job of teeing up some of those, like the contingent rent type area, but there's other areas. This thing changes dramatically, accounting for derivatives and especially in the area of hedging, and there's some real serious problems potentially there. So I would urge you to put together groups on, and I first identify each of those areas, then assign a group to each of those. Someone from the SEC should be on that group as well. And figure out exactly how this thing's going to work and how you think you can reasonably audit it before you ever see the FASB adopt a final standard, so that we know the thing can work before we put it out there and can be implemented by companies in a reasonable fashion. Because as we found from time to time, we've written standards that we think are very good, but you just can't implement them. And it doesn't matter how good the standard is, if we can't implement it and get to good numbers, then again, it isn't going to get us the results that we're looking for. And because these changes are so huge in terms of today's companies and financial statements, and there's so many of them coming, I think it's imperative that, and you know, it's consistent with what the O'Malley panel recommended in 2000, that you set up those groups now, go through that process, such that by the time the board comes out with the standard, you're reasonably comfortable, preparers are reasonably comfortable, this shouldn't be used just as a vehicle to slow down the process, because if that's the way it was used, it'd be extremely unfortunate. But if it's used to really ensure we get better standards and everyone's on board with it, so everyone's buying in before we get to the end, and ultimately it is the FASB's decision here, not the other groups, but ultimately I think that will end up with a lot better standards and process. I would also go back to something that Kurt said about investor education. I don't think investors are even remotely prepared to handle this right now. I've dealt with some of the biggest banking analysts who, surprisingly to me, have indicated they're going to have a very extreme time figuring out how to put fair values into their models. I'm shocked by that. I'm a big proponent of fair value. I personally think it should be a flat two-column approach, one column fair value and one column historical cost. But nonetheless, what I am hearing from investors, and I'm sure it'll be the same thing on issues like contingent rent, for those investors who actually read the financial statements and use them, I think there's going to be a big change in their models as well. There can't help but be a change in their models, and they're going to have to get educated as well. And we're going to have to see how that process will work, because if investors don't know how to handle the information and what the accounting is yielding to them, then we'll have some quagmire there as well. And there's been some indication that they, in some places, just want to maintain the status quo so they don't have to go through that education process or change their model. It's unfortunate, but it is what it is. And I think people have to consider that there's going to have to be quite an education process on the investor side of this thing as well.
I guess as you're talking about implementation, you're also talking as well, Lynn, about it's one thing for preparers to implement. It's also another thing for the auditors to the auditability of that implementation, which can be even if preparers are implementing something using a lot of judgment, how are the auditors auditing that and the auditability of that? So that's the issue we keep seeing to be hearing today.
Yeah, one it's interesting, especially when I heard Mike's conversation at the beginning of this thing. You know, the auditors, and people have heard about this, you know, a decade and a half ago, told the FASB, if you write the standard, we can audit it, no problem. You know, I'm not sure that's necessarily true, even though they said it. To some, you know, to a large extent, this is being driven. This what we're seeing happen now is what the large accounting firms all ask for. You know, it's like you asked for it, you got it. You know, I think that was Toyota who said that. But we might be having the same result. But the firms did ask for this principle-based approach, and they asked for it quickly. The FASB is now giving them exactly what they're asking for, and now all of a sudden you hear them all saying, whoa, wait a minute here. And I think, you know, that just there's just something wrong about that. And so I think the firms need to get behind the FASB and work with the FASB and figure out how to make this thing work, because I think in areas like fair value, the FASB is working in the right direction. Some of the other things, I don't agree with them, but the FASB's given them what they asked for, and they now owe it to the FASB to figure out how to make it work.
Thanks. Sure.
If you go back to my comments, we did talk about, you know, the change in judgment, and a number of times I said that's fine and that's a good thing, but it's the time frame that we're talking about, and I worry about the input that the FASB is going to get during this time frame. We are for quality standards, and judgment's fine, but let's do it in a way where we're not undoing it when we do the implementation.
Brian Croteau, have your card up?
Yeah, thanks, Marty. I just wanted to quickly pick up on 2 points. One with respect to internal control over financial reporting, and certainly there are rules and requirements and models in place today in terms of thinking about design and implementation of controls and auditors auditing controls. Now, you know, what could be supplemented in terms of bringing the right attention on controls in a rapidly changing environment, I think, is a question that is ripe for consideration given the topics that have been discussed today. Would certainly be interested in understanding, though, is that something additive to current rules and requirements versus, again, bringing attention to how to apply what you currently have in place as a question. And then with respect to the judgment framework, certainly the CIFER report did have a list of 11 factors and some documentation considerations, which you know, seemed fairly reasonable, at least in my own view, and wondered, you know, there's nothing really that would prevent, obviously, companies and auditors from looking to that today, and I suspect some do. So the comments with respect to taking some particular action, wonder whether there's, you know, any particular advice as to whether there's something that needs to be done incrementally to those type suggestions, or whether it's just, again, trying to formalize and make that better known.
Thanks. There are two cards up, Jeanette Frenzel and Damon Silver. There's three cards up. So in that order, why don't we take those three comments from the three of you, and then we're running over and we'll break for lunch. Jeanette?
In thinking about the PCAOB's role here, I would urge you to really take a look at this whole situation really as a systemic risk issue. What are the risks associated with maintaining high audit quality and confidence given all of this? And what can the PCAOB do to help mitigate those risks from the standpoint of issuing standards, implementation guidance, working with the profession, et cetera? You know, regardless of how we end up with convergence, and when we get there, there is going to be risk, and I think PCAOB can and should play a key role in helping to mitigate that risk, because I think that otherwise the system just won't have the capacity. So to the extent that you all can mitigate that, I think that's a very important role. Also, keeping in mind that whatever risks don't get mitigated by the preparer community tend to get tossed over to the audit community, I think also it would be very prudent for you all to work very closely with SEC and FASB to really ascertain which risks can be mitigated on that side to help reduce the systemic risk that you all are facing. So I would just really urge you to look at this problem from that standpoint.
Thanks, Jeanette. Damon?
I just wanted to briefly clarify, because I think maybe Harold misunderstood something I said, but it has a larger relevance. I've spoken this many times at this body. My view is not that toxic assets have no value. My view is that whatever the value is of the toxic assets that are on bank balance sheets right now, it is not possible to discover it by looking at the firm's financial statements. And I think that's a big problem. That was the conclusion of our oversight panel when we looked at this a year ago. I don't think anything has particularly changed. I don't doubt that there is a value associated with those assets. I don't know what it is. Some of those assets may have a value of zero, as Harold suggested. Others may, in fact, no longer be toxic. It's just that you can't tell, and that's a big problem. Secondly, it seems to me this discussion draws out something that, in a way, it shouldn't be necessary to say. I think those who look for financial statements to essentially track stock prices, right, I misunderstand what a financial statement is. The financial statement is an input into what investors and transactors and capital markets do, but it by definition can't move with the markets. And the attempt to make it do so, you end up because the actual life of a business cannot be decomposed from the movements of stock prices, the effort to do so turns the financial statement into something not usable. It turns it into mush. And I think you can see that process unfolding in the presentation we've heard this morning as the effort to try to establish a simultaneity and a precision that doesn't exist in the real world ends up requiring both preparers and auditors to essentially make increasingly arbitrary decisions. Then, as I said before, in the service of attempting to get greater precision and market relevance, you end up with less.
I'm not suggesting there's 100% correlation between the markets and accounting, but there has to be some relationship, and today that relationship has been tremendously broken.
Neary Buxman?
Thank you, Marty. I think the last observation actually ties up to what I wanted to start with. I think people need to recall what's the purpose of financial statements, and it's to aid in decision making. And the debate about fair value or historical cost crystallizes the fact that, you know, many intelligent individuals are thinking about it for a long duration and still didn't reach a universal conclusion what's better. Sometimes it states that either different people have different objectives, and sincerely so, or a different situation giving rise to different results, even for the same instruments or the same class of assets. Which gets me to another point where we're thinking about it in the context of financial statements. I think we need to highlight disclosures, because both financial statements and disclosures provide investors and users with the tools they need to do exactly what both Hal also echoes here around the table. A few things that haven't been discussed here today, and I think there has been a concept of kind of pencils down. And I think some of the challenges that we are observing now is the lack of conceptual framework to reconcile with. Because transitioning boards, in theory, should not affect the principal thought if you have a good conceptual framework. It's almost, if the law of the land exists, it's very easy to write bylaws.
it's very difficult to write bylaws when you don't have a law of the land and try to reconcile as an inconsistent framework. It gives you an answer that different boards could have vastly different opinions of how things should be presented, given the fact that different people could have, as we've seen here on the table today, different views about presentation. So there's some merits or scope to, if we do put some hands on some breaks here, we need to think about more comprehensively what financial statement represents, what they are, including the context of audits. And this takes me to, if we do that, I'd like to point to another element, which is a disclosure framework. This had been proposed by the ITAC, and I think there could be some merits that if you don't figure out the accounting yet, there's some scope to tell me the story in the footnotes. And clearly it's going to be audited somehow, which takes me to the last topic that I wanted to touch on, is judgment framework and the judgment we discussed. And maybe I'm a bit naive, but I think two things immediately come to mind. One is that there are two types of judgment where I think some seems to kind of being intertwined in our discussion. One is the preparer judgment, and two is the auditor judgment. I always felt the financial statements are in the business of judgment to begin with from preparer. Whether, and it starts with the simple issue of depreciating assets over its useful life. Quite a complex undertaking if you think about it. Very complex. What's the useful life of a building? Could be quite complex. Even more complex than valuing a toxic asset. And it has been done. Judgment had been applied. And it has been audited, as is purchase price allocation, as is held for sale. So it strikes me that one undertaking for the board or the boards, as well as some preparers, would be, again, I'm kind of taken back. I said, if judgments are an issue, how come they haven't been issued 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when they have been core tenets of financial reporting to begin with? So even if it's just simply reassuring, reaffirming, or clarifying, I think could be a very useful exercise, and in my mind it should be unrelated to any state of progress of the ISB or the FASB around the project, because it seems to be a great state of confusion around an area that, at least to me, seems to be or should be quite clear, unless I miss something.
Good. Neary, thanks for those comments. Obviously, some of the passion around this discussion today, I think, makes clear the importance of this topic, the importance of the accounting developments that are taking place, the pace and the volume of those developments, the impact of those on reliable financial reporting, the impact of those on high-quality auditing, and the impact on things that we at the PCAOB have to take into account as we work closely with and monitor this with FASB going forward. I want to thank Larry Smith very much for your comments, your presentation. Jamie and Mike, I want to thank you for your willingness to participate on the panel, and I want to thank all of the SAG members for very valuable input to us as to how we think about this going forward. We're breaking for lunch. Bella, where are we headed?
We're actually headed to the room right behind where the breakfast buffet is for the SAG members and observers. If you go out any of the doors, Lucia and Keisha will direct you to lunch. And I know we're slightly behind schedule. We have several other topics after lunch, so I was hoping if you could be back here at 1:15, that would be fantastic. Thank you so much.